This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Emily Rooney. It's time for another edition of Everything Money. Our financial expert, Cheryl Marshall, is here to talk. What else? End of the year finances. Welcome back, Cheryl.
Hello, Emily. This is, I know, a segment that you would call tedious.
Okay. That's one of my favorite words.
Yes, I know. That's why, you know, I'm putting the word out there. But I really think everybody, including me, has to be reminded there are things that you have to do at the end of the year to take care of yourself. Just like, you know, you brush your teeth and you go to the doctor and whatever else. You got to just check off your financial health
and
checklist.
And a lot of people are concerned about the fiscal cliff.
Well, that's why it's very important this year in particular to take a look at these things versus any other year end. You know, you have these looming, if I hear those two words one more time, I'm going to barf, okay? So can I say that on the radio?
Yeah, you just did.
Okay. Okay.
But I mean, a lot of things are going to change, you know.
Yeah.
All sudden, state taxes and
the problem is we don't know exactly what's going to change. So all we can do is get a consensus of what we think is going to happen and use that for doing our year-end tax planning. But let's just kind of go through what you need to do. One of the first things that I think is very important and that people don't pay enough attention to is that mutual funds pay out their capital gains in December, Emily, and people need to be very wary of how that's going to affect their tax situation over the year. And the websites of the big firms all will tell you basically when they're going to pay out their distributions. Additionally, if you're thinking of buying a mutual fund in December, don't buy it because you're like double taxing yourself in a certain way. And same thing, if you have accounts at the major websites.
Just make that clear again, because somebody was just telling me about this. If I bought mutual funds right now, I'd be paying for basically a year's worth of taxes.
That's correct. Yeah. Correct, for something that you end up owning for like 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So it makes absolutely no sense. So you can wait until January 1st.
Right.
Or find out maybe the funds have already paid out their capital gains, but it's critical to pay attention to this. Mm-hmm. Very, very important. And since I'm going to assume most of our listeners have mutual funds somewhere, they should pay attention to this. However, as you know, it does not affect your retirement accounts. This is only in your personal investment accounts. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really important to do that. You know, other things that you need to do this time of year, you've got to go through your health savings account, your 401k accounts, your IRA accounts, any single thing that you need to make a contribution to before year end. Although in the case of IRAs, you have until the day you file your taxes to make your contribution.
For the previous year.
Right, for 2012. But, you know, make sure that you've contributed the max. You know, got to contribute to your 401k plans. I'm a big believer in those. They are really found money, particularly when you have employer matches and there's no safety net. The safety net is getting so shredded in this country. So it's really important to make those contributions. Conversely, now I know you're not this age. I know you're not 70 and a half. But, okay, should you be in the next 20 years,
yeah.
Okay, you've got to take your distribution by year end, with one exception.
If you're 70, you have to take your IRA.
70 and a half,
okay,
with one exception. If you're if you own an IRA and you turn 70 and a half in 1 year, you have until, like you have to pay into your IRA until you file your taxes, you have the same amount of time to take your distribution the following 4 months when you pay your taxes. But if you don't take your withdrawal when you hit age 70 and a half, you can have taxes as much as 50% on the amount of money you were supposed to take out.
Really?
Bravo. Yes. It's really a tax penalty.
Error. Yeah. Oh, I see. It's a tax penalty.
Well, it's
penalty.
Not an error. I'm sorry. It's stupidity.
Yeah.
If you're not going to, you know, stay on top of your own money, who is?
Yeah, true.
Okay, if you don't know that you're 70 and a half and you have to take your money out.
I didn't know that. Well, I'm not 70 and a half, but I didn't know you had to start taking it when you're 70.
Okay. Well, yeah, you have to. All right. And everybody else, pay attention. You got to take care of this.
All right. We're going to take some calls here today, too, if anybody wants to ask anything about year-end finances. We've got Cheryl Marshall here in the studio to answer your questions. Number is 877-301-8970. 877-301-8970. Any questions about year-end finances.
Okay. But let me just say one thing as people call in.
I'm
not a tax person. I'm just being tedious today.
Yeah.
Okay. That's my
I know you're not a tax person.
Yeah. I'm not a tax person, but I am tedious. Okay. The other thing that people should be doing is...
Don't turn that radio down.
Don't turn this off. The other thing that people should be doing is taking a look, if they have mortgages, about refinancing their mortgage before year end. Now, I am not a guru. I left the crystal ball at home. I don't know where interest rates are going to go next year. Right now, the Fed is still doing quantitative.
They're as low as they've ever been. It's
been wild. Right. Quantitative easing. But you know what happens? Something hits bottom. It's going to have to turn around. And mortgage rates are incredibly low. So this is an incredible opportunity. For example, if you have a 30-year mortgage to refinance at a lower rate for a 15-year mortgage where your house will be paid off soon, you may want to consolidate your home equity line and your major home mortgage into one mortgage, although you may not. But you really, this is yet another
home equity. What is the rate on those for the most part?
I haven't looked at them recently, but I have a different take on home equity lines than most people do. This is if you're a conservative manager of your money. I think most people should have them because they're good for an emergency. And it's not, you shouldn't use it to go to the mall, as they were talking about
before. That's the problem people do.
Right, but that's not what it's for. It's for an emergency. Let's say... your boiler blew up, or you had to make some major, you know, you were caught in Hurricane Sandy and the insurance company hasn't paid yet, and you need a huge amount of money to get your roof back. That's what it's good for.
Exactly. That's
right. Kind of your emergency
funds.
You should have
open.
One. Right.
But the temptation is, you know, I know so many people just use it. It's
I know.
Foolish.
Well, I'm not one of them, but and I don't think people should do that. I mean, you know, that's another thing you should do is try to look to be more fiscally disciplined yourself. I mean, the whole country's going nuts about, you know, the federal budget being, you know, disciplined. Well, guess what? We need to be disciplined too.
All right. We've got Chris from Providence. You've got a question for Cheryl. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, thank you. My company went out of business earlier this year, so I was forced to close and basically cash out my 10 years of 401k. So they sent me, actually, instead of sending me a check, I rolled it over into a company, but it's just sitting there. I haven't reinvested it in anything. It's just basically cash sitting in an account. So what you mentioned a few minutes ago, should I wait until January 1st to try to reinvest that into another company?
No. What I was talking about is mutual funds. And what you should not do is invest in a mutual fund that is going to be paying out their capital gains this month, because you will end up, as Emily and I were discussing before, paying taxes as if you own the fund for a year.
Yeah, so, that would stick. Okay.
But a 401k account is different.
A 401k account
he could reinvest that anytime.
Anytime you want to. This is only in your personal investment account.
Perfect.
All right. Chris, thanks.
Thank you for calling.
Glad we could be of help.
Thank you.
We're talking to our financial expert, Cheryl Marshall, about end-of-the-year finances. As Cheryl has said, she's not a tax expert, but there's a lot of tips you can do to save money, to pay less taxes if you wisely wrap up your finances at the end of the year. So if anybody's got a question, 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970.
Let's talk a little bit about capital gains for a second, because I really do think that's the one thing that is going to change. And everybody's groaning and moaning that the long-term capital gains rate is going to change. And one thing I want to point out, and I'm not the first person to say it, but I just kind of went back to look at what historical capital gains rates were. Arguably, two of the greatest periods of prosperity during our lifetimes, Emily, were in the 80s and the 90s under both Reagan and Clinton. And guess what? Capital gains rates were at their highest then. So it seems to me
the taxable rate.
Yeah.
What was the taxable rate back
28%
then?
On long-term capital gains versus 15% now. Now,
that's a lot.
Yeah. Well, everybody was doing very well in the 80s and 90s. It's all relative. I mean, it really is. And
there are no capital gains right now.
That's 15%. So, you know, there's people saying, oh, I should take my capital gains now because the rates will be higher next year. And I'm highly confident that the rates will be higher. However, whatever Warren Buffett says, as far as I'm concerned, is gospel. And he's right. You should. And when I was investing people's money, I always said this: don't buy or sell a stock for tax reasons. Okay, if you think a stock's going to go higher, don't sell it because you think you're going to save money on taxes, because it's just not a wise, quote unquote, economic decision. Mm-hmm. But if you have a stock that you're kind of thinking about and saying, you know, I don't know what's going to happen next year. I mean, look at Apple. It's down 150 points off as high. Maybe now's the time to sell it and save yourself some money on taxes.
Or buy it.
Okay, that's true. That's true. And the other thing is rebalancing your portfolio. This is the time to, you know, look and see, maybe you have too much of one mutual fund, less of another. You can balance your gains or your losses, but it is the time to do a financial inventory.
All right, we're taking your calls today. Cheryl Marshall is here, our Everything Money expert. We've got Bob from Temple, New Hampshire. Go ahead, Bob.
Hey, good afternoon. I'm currently working. I'm 69. I'll be 70 next year. And I'm in a catch-up system with the 401k and IRA Roth.
Good.
Should I cash out now before the fiscal cliff?
No.
Or should I? No. Okay.
No.
The other question is, should I take a lump sum? I know you said on earlier in your program you have to start taking it or cash out completely at 70 and a half.
That's correct. Well, the best thing you should do is to take it out over, you know, life expectancy. So if you go to the United States government website, among many others, that have these calculators, and you put your age in, when you're going to be 70 and a half, and the amount that you have in your 401k plan, they'll tell you how much of a distribution that you need to take every year. And it is taxable. Don't forget that at ordinary income rates.
So which is a good reason not to take it all out at
right.
once. You'd lose half of it.
So what
if
you're
lucky.
Yeah. So
maybe 60%.
No, you don't lose 60%. Those are marginal rates, and we're going to talk about that too. So, you know, what you want to do is, you know, take a look and see what the best situation is for you. You know, generally speaking, what used to happen is when interest rates were higher, people would take distributions and also with their Social Security, and they would reinvest them at higher rates. But with rates so low, it doesn't seem to make a difference. You're doing yourself a favor by keeping as much as you can afford in your 401k until you have to take it out so that it can be reinvested in a tax-sheltered way. Does that answer your question?
So that does. Another question. Do you have to take it out completely, take out the whole amount?
No. That's what I'm trying to tell you. You basically, quote-unquote, annuitize it over your life expectancy. And those actuarial tables and everything are on many websites, including the government.
They tell you the minimum you have to
take. Yeah, they give you your minimums.
Okay, great. Because I just went through the process of a reverse mortgage, so I'm kind of in a good situation because all I have is that and my Social Security to live on once I retire in March. Okay. What's the website again? U.S. government?
Well, if you can go in the U.S. government, go in the IRS website. I also recommend very highly the AARP website has, I'm sure they have that calculator also because they've got every other calculator out there.
All right, Bob. Thanks
Thank you so much.
All right, we've got Kevin from Worcester. What do you got, Kevin?
Hi. I had a question about 401k catch-up contributions.
What does that mean, by the way?
Catch-up contributions are if you haven't fully funded your 401k and you're over a certain age, the IRS lets you deduct off the top more money to put in your 401k.
Right. And in my 401k plan, there's a website associated with it, of course. You can go in there, and one of the things they ask you is, have you already reached the nominal maximum amount? And then the 401k catch-up contribution for my age group is supposed to be applied on top of that. But they don't say what the mechanism is for arranging for that to happen.
I'm not quite sure I understand. Arranging for what, the catch-up amount?
Yes.
Now, this is your company's website?
Well, it's handled, of course, by an investment company.
Right, so I could you be a little bit clearer? In other words, your money isn't getting paid in, or they're not showing the amount of money. I don't really understand.
No, it's nothing like that. I mean, you're eligible for the catch-up contribution, but they won't let you arrange for that until you've already reached the nominal maximum contribution.
Oh, until you funded your maximum.
That's correct.
Oh, okay. Well, yes, that's correct.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay. So, but then they don't It's not really a transparent process. Does that catch-up contribution have to be made, number one?
No, that's voluntary, and I don't know. I'm sure each company does it differently, but
I wasn't asking if it was mandatory. I was asking if the process for making that has to be via payroll deduction.
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I really don't. I think you have to contact the HR people at wherever you're working to find
works. They refer us to the investment company whose name begins with a V. I have to find the time to sit through the...
Nothing is easy.
See, that's the problem with all this. They put the burden on all the individuals, and it's terrible. That's why I bang the table for financial literacy and transparency.
It's awful. I mean, even the
terrible,
even the terminology catch up. I mean, it's like
everything, and even the most sophisticated people have trouble reading their, all their financial statements.
I was trying to read through an insurance claim this morning. That's
See?
Even worse.
Yes, correct.
That's just outrageous. I got my blood boiling. I was on the roof this morning.
I rest my case. So shall we chat a little bit about marginal rates? Okay. This is just a little conversation, the fiscal cliff. The biggest conversation, there is the New York Times was actually taken to task for this by many, many writers saying the tax rate is going to go up to 39% and whatever it is. It is not your gross income. This is the marginal amount that you have to pay. It's the amount that you have to pay on what is left after you make all your itemized deductions. And what I find the most interesting thing is that many people don't itemize, and they end up paying way more taxes.
A lot of people think they can't. Why
well,
is they, that?
I don't know, but they can. They can itemize. So when they're talking about the fiscal cliff and raising marginal rates, a close look at the president's plan shows that many families making up to $300,000 or even hundreds of thousands of families with larger incomes are not going to pay taxes at the higher marginal rate because the tax code is so complex, they can get all their deductions down to something like $230,000 and they don't end up paying it. And, the media is going crazy. WGBH excluded. and they're just not explaining it. These are marginal rates.
Marginal rates, I understand. So it's on after everything's been paid.
That's
taxes,
correct.
And
they put in
donations.
Safeguards so that people...
Well, tell people how they can item. I know you're not a tax person, but people, I rent my apartment, I don't know.
I mean, there's so many different deductions that you can take, for example, if you own your own business. I mean, most people who own their own businesses,
they know.
I find it pretty savvy, about what they can take. But, many people don't even bother, taking their mortgage interest deduction or they lose track of it or their charitable deductions or, whatever you can deduct for sending your tax credits for sending your kid to college or, any of those things. Hmm. It's quite stunning. They actually had somebody on from the IRS yesterday on the radio who was saying this, too, that people don't take advantage. People don't take advantage of deductions as much as they should. Hmm. And the tax code's just getting worse and worse, as we know, more complicated.
Well, do most people do their own taxes? Because that's where it gets complicated. I mean, itemizing can be a little bit complex, and a lot of people don't want to pay somebody else to have it.
I don't know the answer to that particular question, Emily. So, but
they probably do it themselves.
H&R Block is in business for a reason. How's that?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Cheryl Marshall, always a pleasure to hear from you.
My pleasure. And I want you to go home, okay?
Yeah.
And I want you to do your fiscal inventory.
I actually have done it.
And same
it
with Callie, okay? And then I want you to have a Merry Christmas.
I'm not bad. I'm not too bad at all that stuff. I didn't say I was good. I'm just not that bad.
Both of you, okay?
Right. You too. Have a happy. Thanks, Cheryl. All right, Kelly Crossley is back.
Well, I have a question for both of you when I'm not doing my fiscal, whatever. Can you think of a contemporary author or book that will still be relevant in 2080?
Hillary Mantel's book.
E.L. James. No, just kidding.
Hillary Mantel's book, Bringing Up the Bodies, and the one before it about Henry VIII.
Oh,
okay.
That's a good one.
Wolf Hall.
All right. Yeah. We're going to ignore Emily's suggestion about 50 Shades of Grey.
That was a joke. It was a joke.
We'll be exploring if the literature of today has what it takes to last decades from now. I'm Callie Crossley.
I'm Emily Rooney, and this is Boston Public Radio.